So I'm 22 now. I experienced glandular fever in January 2019. So I was 18 at the time, in my second year at St. Ian's doing my A levels. So I was head girl at the time, and yeah, it was around January when I got glandular fever, and that wiped me out for probably around 6 weeks.
In the middle of studies as well, what kind of impact did that have on your education? I mean, being head girl as well at the time, as you mentioned, you must have had quite a few responsibilities on the go at the same time.
Yeah, and I think that was something that impacted me going back into school. So for the 6 weeks or so when I was really ill with the virus, I was pretty much bedbound, couldn't do a lot, lots of sleeping and just ill, just being ill. And then I think it was probably due to being head girl and obviously the pressures of it being my final year of A levels, getting to university, things like that. I think as soon as I was able to get out of bed and feel like I could function more normally, that's when I kind of went back into the school environment.
And you were saying before, you're still yet to have ever had an ME diagnosis, but you did reach out to Juan, of course, at ME Support Isle of Man. Why did you first take those steps? When did you realise something might not have been quite right, I suppose?
Yeah, so I think for me, I was in quite a fortunate position in that I knew Juan outside of his role with the ME Association, and I think he was just getting into recovery. And I think he posted something on Facebook because we knew each other through hockey, and it was how you kind of manage your energy levels and using it as like a, I think it was the bank analogy. And I think I just dropped Juan a message and said that was really useful because it's something that I can use in my day to day, because I had glandular fever, and I don't want to speak on behalf of Juan, but I think that might have raised some alarm bells for you, and just giving me some advice. So I think without that advice, I might have gone and had an entirely different approach to my recovery.
Alarm bells might have been ringing, Juan, but you must have been quite pleased that Georgia did reach out at that time.
Yeah, I think from Georgia's perspective, it was a good decision to reach out to me. I could barely talk at that stage. The extent of my condition was so severe that somebody reaching out brought its challenges for me personally, trying to then respond to the message and then speak to Georgia. But I remember that we sat at the dining table at home and tried to talk through what we were both experiencing, and I hope that was helpful.
And we're going back 4 years, but nowadays, obviously, we're just hearing in recent weeks about referrals for the ME and long COVID support service from Manx Care. They are now open. How differently do you think this would make someone going who like Georgia, who's going through it at school? We know, of course, though, that the caveat is that that only applies to people over 18 at the moment.
Yeah, so there's two factors behind it, probably not making a big difference. The first is that people at school age aren't eligible for the new service. The second factor is when you'd be referred to the service. So firstly, you won't be referred in the first 3 months of your experience because there needs to be a minimum time passed before you can be diagnosed. And then also there's the process of getting that formal diagnosis and being accepted into the service. So there's quite a large window of time between getting a virus and being referred to a specialist service where you need to make your own decisions and make life choices to manage the condition as best you can. And that is a challenge in the school environment when you're trying to take your own energy levels and adapt that to the routine of the classroom.
Georgia, take us back to your time at school, because when I was speaking with Thomas Cleater, another man on the island who lives with ME, he was saying how upset he was thinking back to his time at school and how the attitude of some teachers was lacking in terms of sympathy towards him and helping him out. Was that your experience at all?
Yeah, so I think for me, where I have empathy for anyone that would go through post-viral fatigue like I had, is I think because I was at St. Ian's from year 7 until year 13, and so I knew the staff really well, they knew my personality well, and so they knew as soon as I was back that something wasn't right, and I also felt I had a voice. And so where others might because I was always at the forefront, very academic, and so not putting my hand up a lot, not really being active, I think it would have been obvious that I wasn't doing too well. Whereas with others, if more introverted or just didn't have the same voice that I had, it might just be put down as laziness or just wouldn't have that same support. But I also feel there wasn't much understanding for how I was doing. They could see there was a change in my personality, but for how I was doing and how to manage it, there wasn't much understanding at all.
Do you think the lesson duration was a challenge? How long were your lessons at school at that time, and were you getting tired before the end of them or in the middle of them?
Yeah, so I would experience brain fog. That was a real symptom that I felt. I think it was because there was no kind of, there was little communication for when I had the virus, my glandular fever, until I went back into school. There was no understanding of how I was. It was just, oh, she's back, she's fine. And so it was kind of going from there, trial and error for how I was feeling. But with that and fatigue, that's where you kind of get into a danger zone of pushing things too far too soon. So yeah, I definitely found that the length of lessons I wasn't able to manage. I think in the end, after a couple weeks, I spoke to the sick form support and we changed my schedule. So I had one lesson a day each day, and that continued for the rest of my sick form. So from January until May, and that's how I was able to manage. But I think that, again, because I had a good relationship prior to my illness, I was able to have those conversations.
What is, during your view, and I suppose the charity's view on the support offered at schools at the moment? Because I can imagine, thinking back to my own time at school, that, like you say, it would have been easier, I suppose, to adapt in sixth form when you have slightly fewer lesson times and you're more refined topics. Whereas had it happened to me at the age of, say, 13, and when you've got a full demanding schedule of lesson after lesson after lesson, that would have been harder to not only manage with, but to have time to sort of speak to teachers. And like you say, if you're not able to get noticed, to stick your hand up and say something.
I think it's a more difficult environment to manage the conditions. So for adults who are in a workplace and are able to negotiate flexible working arrangements and, you know, work from home, and there's more of that in the workplace now. I think in school, it's a much more dynamic environment, and there's rigidity as well built into some of the routine. And then there's the number of people you're dealing with as well as a pupil. You know, the number of teachers and the interaction is diluted. So for somebody to detect that there's something wrong with you, it's more difficult because they're only seeing you infrequently. If you've got a line manager at work, they're seeing you all the time, they can pick it up more easily. So I wouldn't want to pass judgment on how the schools are dealing with it, because it is a challenging thing. And I think the really important message is to keep talking and raising awareness about these types of conditions, because the more we understand as a community, and the more that teachers and pupils and everyone involved understands, the more you can make little adjustments which help people out.
Does the education department respond to the charity much? Are you involved in talks to better educate, I suppose, teachers as well, and raise that level of awareness?
We would love to be involved more. So if there's anybody listening, a teacher or a head teacher or somebody from the Department of Education who is willing to work with us, we'd love to do more in the schools. We've had great success with the Chamber of Commerce, with the Specialist Service, with Manx Care. Public Health have been talking to us recently. The schools is something we haven't been able to make as much progress as we'd like to. And we made an offer in the summer of 2021 to get more involved, and we reiterated that offer two or three more times in the following 6 months or so. And we just haven't been able to get any traction and get that foot in the door. If we're able to, we'd love to help more.
And that relationship, I suppose, between Manx Care and the DESC, do you think if there was that provision for under-18s, it might seem a bit of a stretch, but do you think there might be more emphasis on going to schools as well and saying this is something you need to look out for?
It has been looked at over the summer. So there was conversations between the Department of Education and Manx Care over the summer that I'm aware of. So they are trying to do it. Mm. And yeah, I agree. If the paediatric service develops, then that should have benefits for schools as well. And the links in a community like ours, those links should be strong and you should see improvements across the board.
And George, I'll just come back to you. On a personal level, how are you now compared to how you were in 2019?
So it's difficult to compare how I was like pre and post because my perspective has changed so much. And it was definitely a learning curve that I think I needed. But I feel like I'm good health now. And I'm able to manage my energy and do everything that I'd like to. But that was a long time, and it wasn't linear either. There was lots of ups and downs and just adapting and knowing what I was capable of.
What advice would you give to somebody going through a similar situation right now?
I think I would definitely say just listen to what your body's saying. Don't feel pressure, whether that's from... fortunately, I didn't get pressure from my parents, but if the parents weren't as aware or understand, don't feel pressure from parents, teachers, or just society to do more than you can. And it's, yeah, not laziness, just if you need to rest, take it.
And I suppose from your own experience, you realise on the island there are people out there who will listen and understand. You got in touch with the charity. How beneficial would that be to somebody perhaps who's even younger than what you were?
I think it would be hugely beneficial because from my experience with post-viral fatigue, it can be a downward spiral and quite quickly if it's not managed or if it's not understood. And I think for me especially, there was a direct link with how my mental health was doing. So when I was ill and then when I had low energy, it completely felt like I'd lost my identity because I knew myself as hardworking and really athletic. And so to not be able to work or go out and do any exercise, I just lost that sense of identity. And I think also it's difficult because I wasn't able to have energy to say like communicate with school friends when I was ill or socialize as well. So like sort of the common room in the sick form area I was too sensitive to the noise, and so I'd have my one lesson, and like we said, smaller groups for A level, there'd be three of us, there'd be the only three people I'd see that day apart from family, and then I'd go home. And so it can be a huge strain if it's not managed properly and can spiral.
And like you were saying, physically active as well, what kind of impact did this have? You both know each other through hockey, so you'll both be able to offer some perspective on this. I mean, your impact on the sporting activities that you took part in.
Yeah, so I haven't fully gone back to the same intensity of exercise that I had previously, but it was now just incorporating it and knowing how to manage. Because I think for me to feel balanced, I need to have some sort of activity, but it's just knowing that it doesn't need to be that same intensity as well. I think after school and finishing my exams, there was a big question mark of what I'd be able to do. I mean, at the time, I did go back to a GP because my energy levels didn't have that much improvement. And it was a generic, wait a bit longer, see if you get any better. And in that time, I had taken up an internship at Canada Life. And they were really good. And I guess I had more awareness with it, having full HR and that infrastructure of having part-time and having that flexibility like we've mentioned before. So I deferred the university offer I was given at the time and worked from like 9 till 1, 5 days a week. And with that, I was able to manage my energy and get my health back.
How long was it after you first had glandular fever that you were able to work full-time?
It was January 2019 when I had my glandular fever. I was offered a full-time position April 2020, but I think this is where it was almost a perfect storm in that the lockdowns happened, and so I was able to start working full-time from home, and that made a huge difference in the stresses of getting to work, take energy, dealing with people, being around people, the air conditioning, huge thing, like things that are tiny in everyone's days but make a huge impact to your energy, especially when you're vulnerable. And so I went into the office for the first time in July 2020, and that's when I was probably well enough to do that. So that's 18 months.
Mm-hmm. And how does that reflect with your experience?
there are similarities in my personal experience, but I recall that time when Georgia was returning to work full time, and I messaged Georgia and I thought now's a good time to pass on some wisdom from my own experience, because I got back to working full time and then everything came crashing down on me and my health relapsed, and I was never given any warnings about how those types of relapses happen. And I reached out to George, and I didn't really know how to say it. how do you explain to somebody that there's a risk that their life might come crashing down around them? Like, you can't just say it that bluntly. But I really thought it was important to express the warning in a way that Georgia could take the advice on board and deal with it proactively should there be something in her life, whether it be a return to work or in a few years' time, that could be a trigger event for a relapse. And it's sort of simple advice. Like George has been talking about listening to your body. So if you get into that environment where you're pushed beyond your limits by whatever happens to you in your life, then, look after yourself for a few weeks. Make sure you get through that period safely and then go back to normal life or your normal routine and pushing yourself a bit harder. Because my story is that I had a few weeks in 2018 when I probably could have got things under control, didn't. And it's 4.5 years later. And for most of that time, I was housebound and, my life has been changed completely and irreversibly by not making those adjustments. And we all need to be conscious that viruses can have this long-term threat for people. And there's a possibility that if you've had post-viral fatigue at any point in your life, but particularly if it's been noticeable and it's given you a chunk of time off work, it could come back later in life, and you need to be aware of the warning signs.
And how much did physical activity play into those few weeks that you mentioned just there? Were you getting back into hockey and things like that after having... it was Epstein-Barr as well that you suffered from as well.
Yeah, so the time I refer to is actually 6 years after I had glandular fever, Epstein-Barr virus. And it was a consequence of 3 or 4 factors. I was working full-time and had done for 4 years on the trot at that stage, 4 or 5 years. And I had returned to playing hockey that year. So my physical activity is sort of built up over a 4-year period. And that was certainly a catalyst, not a sort of a single thing that pushed me over the limit, but I was doing more physical activity. And it got to the stage where I could just about play a match of hockey. And it was like, I'm so close to being able to take part normally. You feel like, let's just try and make that happen. And then I also sort of linked to the hockey, became chairman of the committee at the hockey club. And that extra thought process that I had to go through thinking about stuff to do with the committee when I was getting home from work or when I was on lunch, sending WhatsApp messages to captains. And then I went on holiday as well over that summer, and it was sort of a hiking holiday. And the mixture of the physical stuff, the fact I worked hard and I was in a challenging career, and those additional extracurricular activities, they all added up. And the warning signs were there for about 6 weeks that I was about to go off the cliff edge. I didn't spot them.
Mm. And how has that sort of experience and advice played into your own return to like you were saying, you play hockey, but not at quite the same intensity as you used to?
Yeah, I think that was really kind of fundamental in understanding, because otherwise I would have had not much idea. And I think just having that warning and knowing that you can read the signs, Dewan's able to look on hindsight, but for me, I'd be able to play on that and know that if I'm not feeling 100%, take it easier. And I think particularly coming from a sporting background where doing exercise or sessions, you push harder. And you think, I'll gain more. If you just push that extra bit, then you'll gain more because you'll get stronger, you'll get faster, get fitter. Whereas with my experience of fatigue, doing that would make it the opposite. And so just understanding that more and knowing when times where previously I might have pushed just to make it, just to do that a little bit more, I can meet this deadline if I just do this a little bit more, actually just going, that'll wait until tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And just understanding that and just being really self-reflective.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Little Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.